Good morning, Arizona. You're tuned in to Rosie on the House. An opening day of college football. We're a little bit distracted in here at my house, but we're here to talk about your home, your house, your cabin, or your castle. On these Labor Day and three-day weekends, a lot of time people are out and they're not in a position to call in. So if you've had a question that you've been eager to ask, but every time you phone the number, you get a busy signal, now's your chance. 1-888-767-4348. 767-4348. Chances are on these weekend, long three-day weekend vacations. Sounds like everybody left town last night from the pictures I saw from family and friends, people trying to get into the cooler country for one last summer getaway weekend. They were sure fighting a lot of traffic. So if you weren't one of those and you are here in town and you're trying to get something done, give us a ring. We'd love to put our help and experience to work for you. 1-888-767-4348. Or if you just want to trash talk football teams, we can go toe-to-toe with almost anyone as it relates to that. So I love the college football season. And Romy, I don't know if it's the football I love more or the change of weather I love more, but the fact they just go hand in hand, I wish I could just live in the fall all year long. Wherever I am, how could I follow that season and just live in the fall constantly? And then the spring is always nice. You know, you get the wildflowers, the desert wildflowers that spring up all over the place. But I love the fall, primarily because it means the end of summer.
Amen to that.
And I've virtually spent my entire life south of the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, moving to Scottsdale was the first time I really lived north of Interstate 10. The rest of my life has all been in the very, very lowest portions of the great United States. I did attend college at Fort Collins, and we lived in Littleton, Colorado for 1 year back in 1964. But generally speaking, I've been from the very, very, very southern parts of the United States. So in the summer is always a great uplifting encouragement to me. I love the fall. We're talking this week in our article that you can only get now one way. It's distributed by email. You need to go to our website, rosieonthehouse.com, and become a subscriber. And you'll get the same. We are still producing a weekly article, but it is only available through our email newsletter. So you have to go to rosieonthehouse.com and subscribe. And we're talking about five different projects that kind of identify what need to be done based on the vintage of your home. And we've been talking about these sunken living rooms for a couple weeks now, really for about the last, I want to say about the last 3 months. It's been one of the most requested remodeling projects we're currently doing. And We've been here in Arizona since the mid-60s. So we've kind of seen every trend of what the builders were doing at the one time and what they've shifted to. And sunken living rooms were just hugely popular all through the 70s. And they were harder to build. They took a little bit longer to build. And now I can't tell you the number of sunken living rooms that we are now being paid to come in and please fill this thing up. Occasionally, a homeowner has tried to do that themselves, and we're asked to come in and make it right. One of the things you don't want to do, and a lot of homeowners are more comfortable working with lumber and wood than a lot of them are working with concrete. So they rip 2x6s down and install floor joists in the sunken living room and then apply a tongue and groove plywood subfloor to that to match the level of the rest of the concrete house. And I can tell y'all, folks, that is a horrible way to raise a sunken living room floor. Because you are generating conditions very, very conducive for termite infestation, locking all of that wood in below the stem wall height of your home. You're just begging for problems. We recently filled a concrete living room floor in up at just on the north side of Piestewa Peak. And one of the things you have to consider is your electrical outlets. Now, you know, they're in the wall kind of low because you want them about 8 to 12 inches above the floor. Well, if we're going to fill in 6 inches of concrete, 5 to 6 inches of concrete, sometimes 7 inches of concrete, you don't want those electrical receptacles down there at 2 inches above the finished floor. You're not even going to be able to put baseboard in there. So that's one of the things that a lot of homeowners don't consider is, okay, let's get these receptacles moved up to where it looks like the house was built this way, okay? The other thing we tell people that we really want to do, really do a very, very good inspection for termites. Those sunken living rooms were horrible places for moisture to enter the house and create a termite problem. And once we get the next 5 or 6 inches of concrete poured on top of the 3 or 4 inches that's already there, it makes it a lot harder to treat that area should it ever have a termite infestation some point in the future. So we generally tell people, look, now would be the right time to pre-treat this entire area. Let's drill this old slab and juice it up really good under there before we pour the top. It's going to buy us a level of protection. Now, I will admit, there are some homes that were built back in the 60s where we had a chemical called chlordane that we were using for termite pre-treatment. And some of those homes that were chlordane protected still to this day, 60 years later, have not seen a termite on their property. So if we can determine it was a home built in the 60s that's never had termite problems, it was probably chlordane treated, then we don't. But if that's not the case, if it's a newer home, particularly built through the 80s and 90s, then we always like to termite pre-treat before we pour the slab on. And people ask me, well, do you pour in 2 or 3 inches of ABC and then pour the concrete on top of that? Nope. We just fill the whole thing with concrete. And the next thing you need to know is it takes a long, long time for that concrete to hydrate or cure. Because when we normally pour concrete, we're pouring it on top of a sand and gravel base. And the moisture has a way to gravitationally find its way out of the cement concrete mixture. Some of it is pulled down by gravity. Some of it evaporates through the surface. But when you're pouring a concrete slab on top of a concrete slab, that moisture has absolutely nowhere to go.
You'll wake up the next morning and think you're in London. You're like, what's all this fog in here?
You will. That's exactly right. You will. And it could take as long as 6 to 8 weeks for that concrete to cure enough, especially if you want to lay a tile down with thinset and grout. So you've got to be aware of those particular maneuvers, but it will make the house feel bigger, you'll eliminate that tripping hazard, and it's one of the things that brings those houses built in the 70s and the 80s back into the current way of doing things.
Once you start living on that flat surface, you'll start asking the question, why did they ever do this to begin with?
Yeah.
Whose idea was this?
So that's just one of the projects we want to talk about. We want to get to calls. We've got Betty calling from Tucson and Bridget and Lynn and Brad. Let's get to a few calls here and then we'll come back to the next project that we are most often being asked to do at Rosie on the House Remodeling. Betty calling from Tucson. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Rosie?
Great.
Good. Easy question for you today, for starters.
Okay.
But before I ask the question, I do want to let you know one thing. I was so excited yesterday while I was driving around with my boyfriend. I did see one of the Rosie Preferred People stickers on one of the contractor's trucks. I was very excited.
Driving around down in Tucson?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, actually, I was in Green Valley at the time, and it was really, really wonderful.
And let me guess, I'm going to put on my Nostradamus hat. You didn't see any cigarettes fly out. You didn't see him cut anybody off. You didn't see him brake check anybody, right?
No, and they were driving correctly. Not too slow, not too fast.
Great. Well, that's great to hear, Betty. We have our referral directory in Southern Arizona, Pima and Santa Cruz County, really growing well thanks to someone we've put on down there about a year ago, Miss Noelle Kurtz. And she's just doing a fabulous job down there finding contractors that can grow to become Rosie certified. So we're excited about what's happening down in Tucson right now.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I'm back with my house. That's the 1928 house. I need to replace the windows throughout the house. Should I, number one, get vinyl clad, or what type of window do you suggest? And the other question is, do I need to talk to the plaster guy first? Or are the window guys going to take care of everything? The house is actually brick, and there is flaking plaster around it. So I want to make sure that I've got the right person there at the right time.
I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. We would recommend the Pella. There's a fiberglass product called the Encompass, or if you can afford it, a wood-framed aluminum clad like the Pro or Architectural Series. That's the Reader's Digest version. We'll come back with Rosie's soapbox version.